It's the NPR News Update. Happy Thursday, August 28th. I'm Phil Picardi. Coming up on the podcast, Minnesota's U.S. attorney files suit against St. Anthony over a mosque. The Southwest Light Rail line inches closer to approval. What the governor candidates are saying about roads and bridges. What the Senate candidates are saying at the state fair. And we hear about horses and first-timers at the fair. First, a St. Paul police officer was involved in a fatal shooting on the west side of St. Paul this morning. Police say the officer was unharmed and that a person described as a suspect was killed. The shooting happened near the intersection of Wabasha and Plato. Witness Toby Mertz says he saw the suspect punch and throw rocks at an officer.
And then he turned and saw the other officer who already had his weapon drawn and was throwing, and then just quit throwing and charged directly at him. And that's when the officer fired three times.
Police described a few more details of the incident at a 1 o'clock news conference. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources says it will offer a deeper explanation of what officials believe is happening with walleye reproduction on Lake Mille Lacs tonight. The DNR holds a meeting in New Brighton to discuss the 40-year walleye population decline on the lake. The DNR's Tom Jones coordinates the agreement with tribes that are allowed to net walleye on the lake as part of their treaty rights. He says the DNR wants to give concerned citizens a chance to learn more.
We are trying to answer questions that were often asked, but we just don't have time in many of our current settings to give complete satisfactory answers to.
The DNR faces a lawsuit from resort owners who believe allowing netting during spawning season hurts the overall walleye population. The DNR says reasons for the population decline are complex and range from climate change to predators. The agency plans to post additional information about the Mille Lacs fishery on its website next month. A St. Paul-based think tank is calling on the state to increase funding for enrichment classes. Tim Post reports.
Minnesota 2020 combed through financial data from the state school districts stretching back to 2002 and found a decline in funding for courses in art, business, and computer science. Michael Dietrich is an educational policy fellow for the group.
Spending on these subjects dropped 10%. Or about $88 million.
Dietrich says over the same period, funding for math courses increased by 10%. He blames the shifting priorities on state funding cuts and an increasing emphasis on standardized testing. Minnesota 2020 maintains students do better in core classes like English, math, science, and social studies when paired with enrichment classes. The report did find an increase of funding in recent years for programs that support English language learners, special education students, and early childhood learning. Tim Post, Minnesota Public Radio News.
7 months after ending a lockout, the Minnesota Orchestra has announced some major donations. Four anonymous donations to the orchestra total $13.2 million, including one gift for $10 million. Interim President and CEO Kevin Smith says the donations come as the orchestra rebuilds.
This orchestra, as with many arts organizations and many orchestras, still has some challenges ahead of it. We have to balance our budget and we have to build our programming. There are all kinds of challenges ahead of us. And this is a tremendous shot in the arm at a very critical moment.
Smith says the gifts will fund an endowment as well as some new artistic initiatives beginning in the 2014-15 season. The U.S. is trying to determine if a second American man fighting with the Islamic State group has been killed in Syria. State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki says the U.S. has no independent confirmation of reports of a second American killed while fighting with the militant group. Counterterrorism officials say they're focused on preventing more Minnesota men from traveling to Syria to join radical groups, but identifying them is a challenge. Laura Ewan reports.
The death of former Twin Cities resident Douglas MacArthur McCain in Syria has heightened concerns about the threat of extremist ideology here in the U.S. FBI spokesman Kyle Loven says the Bureau has concentrated much of its outreach efforts in the Somali American community, where religious and civic leaders are on the lookout for disaffected young men who may be vulnerable to recruiters. But McCain was African American, suggesting the targets could be anybody.
It's hard to predict who will find the message of jihad and the call to jihad to fight overseas. It's very difficult to predict, you know, with any certainty, for whom that message will resonate.
Loven says a handful of Twin Cities men have traveled to Syria to fight for the insurgents. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Justice Department is accusing St. Anthony Village of illegally denying a permit for a mosque. In a lawsuit filed yesterday, the U.S. Attorney for Minnesota says the 2012 City Council decision violated anti-discrimination laws. City officials say it was appropriate to keep worship services out of the office building. Brant Williams reports.
2 years ago, the St. Anthony Village City Council voted 4-1 to deny the Abu Huraira Islamic Center a conditional use permit to operate a mosque in the basement of an office building. At the time, city officials said the city's zoning code didn't allow religious worship in buildings zoned for light industrial use. However, U.S. Attorney Andy Luger says in the past, the city granted a similar permit for a Christian organization.
In 2008, the city council unanimously approved a conditional use permit for a church, the Twin Cities Christian Association, to operate in a business center in the commercial zone.
St. Anthony Village City Attorney Jay Hilgren says the city did not deny the mosque's permit based on the religion of its worshipers. Hilgren says the city is trying to reserve its light industrial areas for specific enterprises.
Religious uses are allowed in the vast majority of the city, and they're welcome of any faith, just not within that small part of the city, which is reserved for job creation and to be the economic engine of the city.
According to the complaint, the leaders of Abu Huraira had been searching for 3 years for a space large enough to accommodate its hundreds of mostly Somali members. They chose the St. Anthony Business Center on Old Highway 8 because it had room in its basement for services and a large enough parking lot to accommodate its growing membership. The mosque's president says he's grateful the U.S. attorney filed the lawsuit and says it's been frustrating for the members not to have a central place to worship. Ellen Longfellow is a civil rights attorney for the group Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, which also welcomes the Justice Department's intervention.
We are pleased to hear about this action in support of religious freedom, and we hope that it will be resolved quickly so that they'll be able to, the local community will be able to use the Islamic Center for its needs.
Longfellow says the case in St. Anthony is one of several in the past 2 years where proposed mosques faced backlash from community members. She says mosque proposals in Blaine, Plymouth, Wilmer, and Bloomington were eventually approved. U.S. Attorney Luger says there's no evidence of personal bigotry by members of the St. Anthony Village City Council, and he says the lawsuit will be resolved if the council reverses its previous decision and grants the permit for the mosque. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
The Southwest Light Rail Project has cleared a key hurdle at Minneapolis City Hall. The City Council's Transportation Committee has voted to approve the project, even though several members say the proposal has serious flaws. Curtis Gilbert reports.
Just 5 months ago, the city appeared to be on a collision course with the Metropolitan Council over the project. But after private mediation sessions, both sides agreed to a compromise that's before the City Council this week. The deal appears to have significant council support, but that doesn't mean they all love it. Council member Lisa Bender would rather see the trains travel through Uptown, the densely populated part of the city she represents. Instead, most of the Minneapolis stations would be built on the edge of North Minneapolis, where few people live today. Bender says most of the people who'll benefit from the project live in the cities of Hopkins, St. Louis Park, Minnetonka, and Eden Prairie.
We are building a regional transit system that serves suburban commuters over urban neighborhoods. That is just a fact. I still think that's a better transit system than having no regional transit system at all. But I think it is critically important, not just for the city of Minneapolis, but for our region, that we build the local transit connections that serve urban neighborhoods that this transit system is passing by.
A coalition of groups representing minority residents has been pushing for better bus service so more populous parts of the North Side have access to the line. It's part of a larger package of demands aimed at using the project to improve racial equity in Minneapolis. Mayor Betsy Hodges complains that the Metropolitan Council, which is in charge of transit in the Twin Cities, has merely paid lip service to those proposals.
But we've gotten nothing of substance from the Met Council about equity that they weren't planning on doing anyway.
The same coalition has also been pushing Minneapolis to make sure the light rail project benefits minority residents. The committee voted to respond in writing within 2 weeks. It also asked the city attorney's office to keep tabs on the project's potential environmental effects. The Met Council and the Federal Transit Administration are in the process of studying the impact of burying the trains in a shallow tunnel as they pass between Cedar Lake and Lake of the aisles. Councilmember Lisa Goodman represents residents who fought against the plan to run the light rail trains alongside an existing freight rail line and a popular bike trail. Goodman predicts the study will find problems with the tunnel plan, and the city will face political pressure to let the project go forward anyway.
Suburban mayors, suburban city councils, suburban legislators, the governor's office, the Hennepin County, the Met Council, the business community, organized labor and equity activists are going to be saying you're too far along now to say no.
A group calling itself the Lakes and Parks Alliance of Minneapolis argues Minneapolis shouldn't even vote on the project until a draft of the environmental study is complete. While no lawsuit has been filed yet, the city attorney's office says it expects that issue to be decided by a court. While the line's impact on neighborhoods, the environment, and racial equity remain controversial, Minneapolis leaders agree on one point. They want the land under nearby freight tracks to stay publicly owned. That provides the city some protection against the potential for more freight trains or more dangerous cargo passing through the park-like area between the lakes. Councilmember Goodman plans to vote no on the overall project, but she's happy the city got a written promise from the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority to never sell the land to a private owner.
This is good. It's not great. It's not a guarantee, but it is a step in the right direction. I see absolutely no reason why everyone shouldn't vote for this today.
The city council held a special meeting to vote on public ownership of the freight tracks. It was unanimous. The vote Friday on the overall Southwest Light Rail project almost certainly won't be. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
A major issue facing whoever wins the campaign for governor is how to finance future transportation projects. Transportation experts say the current funding system is not keeping pace with the need. Tom Scheck has a look at the problem and what the candidates for governor are saying about how they would fix it.
The campaign for governor has focused mostly on jobs, taxes, and health care. But there's another issue that the next governor has to address: transportation. And those whose jobs depend on good roads, bridges, and transit say the issue has been ignored long enough.
It seems like it has definitely fallen amongst deaf ears for the most part. It just hasn't felt that there's been much of a sense of urgency whatsoever.
Dean Meyer is the vice president of UFC Farm Supply, an agricultural cooperative based in Maple Plain. His company delivers heating oil and propane, fertilizer, and light equipment like skid steer loaders to customers across southern and western parts of the state. Meyer says he and his drivers know the transportation system firsthand and don't believe it's working well.
The rougher roads, basically, if you're going on them at the normal speed limit, you're going to run it through its life cycle faster because you're hitting bumps faster. So they'll slow down, they'll drive even slower, which takes away from your efficiency and your ability to, deliver product in a timely fashion.
Meyer says there are also problems with roads that shift back and forth from two lanes to four lanes. He said the lane shifts cause bottlenecks that slow his drivers down. Meyer's concern about the condition of the roads and the plea for new construction is a dilemma for policy leaders. The Minnesota Department of Transportation is projecting a $12 billion shortfall to maintain the current road and bridge system over the next 20 years. To make matters worse, MnDOT projects gas tax revenue, the largest funding stream for road and bridge projects, will decline as people drive less and cars become more fuel efficient. During his first term, Governor Dayton declined to make any changes to transportation funding. In fact, he repeatedly rejected calls for a gas tax increase to help pay for more projects. But he said he would make transportation a key issue in a second term. Dayton, who has said he has no plans to raise other taxes if he wins, won't rule out a tax increase to pay for transportation projects.
There's no free lunch. The federal government is not going to be increasing its investment in highways and roads and bridges and public transit to any significant degree. So it's going to have to come from within.
Dayton wouldn't specify whether he would support a gas tax hike, a sales tax dedicated to transportation, or other alternatives. He said, however, that he wants the public and the legislature to consider the options before the 2015 legislative session.
These people will say that we're going to be able to increase our investment in transportation, and at no additional cost to anybody, are just, you know, living in another, on another planet.
No, we don't need a gas tax increase. I don't think we need a revenue increase at all in Minnesota.
Dayton's Republican opponent, Jeff Johnson, says the transportation problem could be solved by reprioritizing spending.
All the energy and focus now is on every form of transportation but roads and bridges, whether it's light rail or commuter rail or high-speed rail or streetcars or bike trails or sidewalks or something else. Everything has moved above it on the list of priorities, and that's backwards. Our priorities have to be on our roads and bridges, and if we do that, there will be plenty of money.
Hannah Nicolet, the Independence Party candidate for governor, isn't ruling out a tax hike to pay for transportation projects, but first, she says transportation funding should be focused on roads and bridges.
We pool all the money and we just reprioritize it to roads and bridges, and if we end up short at the end of the day, you know, after majoring in the majors, then, you know, then we can look at a gas tax increase.
The legislature will also have a major say in determining transportation funding. Republicans have resisted tax hikes of any kind, and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce says it won't support a revenue increase until MnDOT can demonstrate it's using the money it has now as efficiently as possible. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
If you're a candidate running for statewide office in Minnesota, there's no better place to be this time of year than the state fair. Reporter Mark Zedeklik has been spending time with Senator Al Franken and his Republican challenger Mike McFadden as they meet voters from across the state at the fair. Here's his report on what the candidates are saying and what voters are telling them.
DFL Senator Al Franken has no problem attracting attention at the fair. All he has to do is show up at his booth and a decent-sized line of well-wishers forms. Handshakes, hugs, and picture-taking ensue.
Three, two.
Among the Franken fans on this afternoon was 70-year-old Joe Hatcher of White Bear Lake.
Senator, how you doing?
Very good.
You know, if you have trouble backing anything up, just come to me. Within a week, I'll have you back in a semi around a block.
The backing up comment is a reference to this Mike McFadden ad featuring a Franken lookalike struggling unsuccessfully to back a boat trailer into a lake.
Here in Minnesota, there's a right way and a wrong way. And Al Franken keeps missing the mark.
The ad criticizes Franken for almost always voting with President Obama's agenda. Hatcher says he's not pleased with President Obama, but that he thinks Franken has been a good senator, especially when it comes to promoting job training programs.
I think he's pretty straightforward. It's kind of ironic. You see a comic turning into what he made satire out of, but he's doing a pretty good job of it.
To be clear, Franken says the McFadden ad is inaccurate.
I used to have a trailer hitch on when I mowed the lawns for St. Louis Park, and so I can actually, I'm pretty good backing up the trailers.
Franken is also making the case that he's pretty good at working with Republicans amid criticism that he's one of the most partisan Democrats in Washington.
Dang, we got us a crowd. Perhaps it's the fact that Senator Al Franken is sitting right next to me.
Here's Franken making the case that he's not a rubber stamp for Obama on a radio broadcast.
You know, I've disagreed with the president plenty of times on certain trade things, on NSA surveillance. I'm arguing with the administration on the renewable fuel standard right now. I have my differences with the administration.
On the other end of the fair, Mike McFadden is on the radio, too. He's taping a segment on a conservative AM talk station.
Mike McFadden, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, is here at the Minnesota State Fair.
McFadden criticizes Franken for not agreeing to more than three debates. As a person dressed in a chicken suit jumps around in front of the studio with a sign that reads, Al Franken, too chicken to debate.
Al Franken doesn't want to debate. He doesn't want to debate because he doesn't want Minnesotans to know his stance and what the poor track record and lack of results.
McFadden is also getting plenty of attention at the fair, even if supporters aren't necessarily lined up to get a snapshot with him. And while Democrats might bristle at McFadden's boat ramp ad, it seems to be popular with Republicans.
We like your commercials. We especially like the one with the backing the boat into the water.
Oh, isn't that great? Yeah.
That's 52-year-old Rose Croning of St. Paul talking to McFadden. She says his ads are clever. She also likes his call for a smaller, less expensive, and less intrusive federal government.
I believe he is for less intervention in government and to decrease the deficit.
Croning says she also agrees with McFadden that the Affordable Care Act, which she calls Obamacare, should be repealed. Early polling suggests Franken is heading into the November election with a lead over McFadden. But McFadden supporter Ed Egan of Minnetonka says McFadden is a good candidate who has a shot at defeating Franken.
We are a Democratic state, I think. And so it'll be hard to unseat Franken, but he barely won last time, as we all know. And so I think it's a good possibility that he can do it.
And just like Franken used an unpopular President Bush to help bring down Republican Senator Norm Coleman 6 years ago, Republicans hope discontent with President Obama now will help them bring down Franken in November. Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News at the State Fair.
It was another day, another animal on Morning Edition. Out at the State Fair, Kathy Werzer went to the horse barn. Werzer talked with Mike Moser of Forest Lake, Minnesota, showing one of his Peruvian horses at the fair.
They're brought up from Peru. It's a four-beat lateral gated horse. We're considered one of the smoothest riding horses in the world.
I've heard it's like a Cadillac ride.
Yeah, better than that. In fact, I dare you to try a champagne with them.
And not a drop is spilled.
You spill a drop once in a while, but they are extremely smooth. Disposition on them is just tremendous. They're great for kids, trail riding, shows, anything you want to do. They're a great family horse.
Tell me a little bit about the breed itself, because people probably haven't heard about this breed before.
Okay, the breed is basically it's been kept pure for the last 500 years. And my stallion's grandfather is Piloto, which was one of the first Peruvians brought to the United States. They were basically bred for your plantation owners in Peru for long distance travel.
Now, this guy next to you is a chocolate bay beautiful horse, a gelding. Tell me a little bit about him.
This is DRB Flamenco. He's first generation here in the United States. His daddy was brought up 10 years ago from Peru, from Lima. And he's an extremely quiet, giving gelding. I'm really surprised for handicapped people, for instance, if he sees one come up here in a wheelchair, he's up here right now and he's got his nose in their pocket. Definitely check him out. If you're used to driving a Chevrolet, you just stepped into a Rolls Royce. I mean, it's the ultimate breed. I've shown quarter horses for many, 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 many years, and my legs were kind of busted up, so I went to these, and I'll tell you what, I'll never go back.
Kathy Werzer, Mike Moser at the State Fair in Falcon Heights. We're checking in with first-timers at the fair this week. Yesterday, producer Brita Green met up with Paul Grimm of Buffalo Lake.
We're from a small town, so you can tell a big difference between like city people and small town people. That's kind of funny in itself.
What do you look for?
Just the way they act, their mannerisms, and the way they talk, too. If you see something like animals doing something, a small town person wouldn't really think anything of it, but a city person might make a big deal about it. Hopefully we get to go on that big slide. I've always wanted to do that, so we're looking forward to that.
You know, I think it's funny. It's $2.50. That's like a lot of money for a slide ride, don't you think?
I thought it would be more than that. That's a good deal.
Brita Green at the State Fair, the music of Tim McGraw, who appeared at the State Fair last night. I'm Phil Picardi with the NPR News Update podcast. Thanks for coming along tomorrow, the Friday Minnesota News.
Ain't nothing in the whole wide world like a southern girl.